on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, July 27th, 2015 edition of InvestTalk, and I'd like to welcome all of our listeners who are listening via podcast, online on investtalk.com, and our terrestrial listeners in California as well. And we are here for you every single weekday to bring you some balance to the financial news of the day. And we focus on helping you protect your assets, make good investment decisions, make the best possible choices with your money, and find solid ways to grow that money. Well, certainly China is making big news today. The Shanghai Composite had its biggest one-day percentage loss since February 2007, and the roughest day really since before the financial crisis, right? Because that was 2008. Today, the Shanghai dropped 8% overnight and caused some ripple effects. And the big question is, how do you react? Do you have interest in any Chinese companies? Do you own any? If you're looking to buy them, is this a good time to buy? You know, this is a great example of why you need to have a diversified portfolio. And many market watchers didn't see this coming. Well, yeah, I would say many. There were plenty that did, I think, because of the manipulation going on over there in China. But it's something that it just shows you that life is full of surprises and the markets are full of surprises. And the markets move quickly. Equity markets are fast. Real estate markets, the last crash, it was real estate. The real estate crash really took about 2 to 3 years. Okay? So when you're dealing with the equity markets, even the bond markets, things can move a lot faster than you realize if you don't have that experience. Now, we'll be talking more about China and the prospects for the near future, but let's get back to you. Now, this kind of an event always serves as a good wake-up call, and it causes you to take a closer look at the balance in your portfolio. What are you invested in? Are you overweight to any one area? It might have changed since the last time you looked. You know, you might have looked at your portfolio a few months ago and things were going great, but really, if you look at the markets over the last couple months, it's been, I won't say ugly, but poor. Definitely poor. If you look at anything underlying the market, the smaller cap indexes, the things that really matter for the health of the market. There's been a lot of stocks that have gone up big, like the Netflixes and Googles and Amazons, but those are just kind of one-offs. It's not really the character of the market as a whole. So it's important, especially in this time, to have your eye on risk and making sure you have the proper risk in your portfolio. Now it's time to get your voice in on the program. Remember, you can call us live, 4 to 5 Pacific time, on InvestTalk or in between times. Just leave your question. Now here's our first question of the day from our 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART is the number.
My name is Barbara, and my question has to do with dividends. When my stock pays out a dividend, the stock price goes down, and I don't understand that. I would think that it would gain because I got a dividend. Thank you.
No, it's taking, I always think of it this way, you know, stock goes down on the ex-dividend date, right? It'll go down usually the percentage or the amount of that dividend. And everyone say, well, why? I'm not really ahead. Well, generally, yeah, it's true because, remember, a dividend is extracting value from the company. If they're paying investors 30 cents a share, right, then that's 30 cents a share that's coming out of the company. and therefore the value of the stock should go down 30 cents a share. Okay? So, no, it shouldn't go up. It should go down. Nothing you can really play. Usually, over time, as the company continues to do well, that small drop will be erased, and you'll still be able to keep that dividend. So it's something to consider, something to understand, and it's important for everybody to get that concept. The 888-99 chart is our number, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your money question on today's show. Now, why own an investment that can lose double-digit returns while having very little potential for gains? The interest rate risk for today's retirees. That's going to be our main talking point today. But I also have some other ones as well. I really want to talk about value investing. What are the principles of a value investor? There's really six main principles of what it means to be a value investor. A lot of people, I don't think, completely understand what value investing means. And, you know, us in KPP, we are value investors. We don't get caught up in the hype. We don't get caught up in the story. We care about the raw numbers and the actual realistic performance of a company or the economy. So the big question for you is, what type of investor are you? And are you if you think you're a value investor, do you have these principles? These six principles, which I'm going to get to coming up on today's show. So I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about the housing number that came out, new home sales. Were they good? Were they bad? What does that mean going forward? I also want to talk about the future of banking. The future of banking. What is the banking industry going to look like going forward? From an investment standpoint and from just a personal interaction with banks. What is that going to look like going forward? So I want to talk about that. And if we have time, e-commerce shopping done right. And a lot of people shop online nowadays. You know, Amazon's doing pretty well, even though they're still not that profitable, but they're increasing their revenue. And are you doing it right? Are you getting the best deal that you possibly can? Because really, that's the main tenet of online shopping, right? It's easy to find really, really good deals. So that is really what we're going to talk about on today's show. But I want to talk about what's on your mind. I want to hear from you. What are you thinking about? Commodities, China, the housing market, the Fed, interest rates, bonds, Greece, Portugal. There's so many topics to discuss in today's market, and that makes it very interesting, and I'm sure everyone out there has a lot of questions about all those subjects and many more, so please try to get your call in sooner rather than later. Now let's take a quick look at today's market. The S&P was down 12, about 0.6%. The Dow was down 128 points, about 0.75%, and the NASDAQ was down 48 points, little less than 1%. You had gold down slightly, oil down a little bit as well. You had the dollar weak. Euro was stronger against the dollar. The yen was stronger against the dollar. You had small cap stocks were down about 0.8%. So they led last week. We had a really bad week in the market last week. And this week we didn't start off the week very, very well. But well, I will say this. We are hitting some technical support on a lot of the major indexes. So I think the rest of the week, I'm actually bullish for the rest of the week. Maybe into next week a little bit. But this market is in trouble. This market has a lot of underlying issues when it comes to industrials, when it comes to the transports. Even a lot of the technology companies are making big reversal patterns. Biotech sector is starting to really take it on the chin after Biogen Idex's big drop last week. There's a lot of big industrial companies that are just not doing well, guiding weak. The strong dollar is really causing a lot of issues for companies. And this is one of my premises why I think commodities are actually a smart place to be. And that's kind of part of the whole value investing bent. But overall, the market was very weak, hitting technical support. You'll probably see some bounces. But if you are heavily invested in the markets when it comes to, you know, mutual funds, stocks, whatever, start thinking about reducing your equity positions, rebalancing your equity positions, getting into safer type of assets. It's hard to find a lot of safe assets nowadays, but the market is coming under a lot of pressure. Okay. Now, Steve has a date with our listeners in and around San Jose. He's meeting individually for portfolio checkups on August 4th. That is next week. It'll be in San Jose. He's meeting with a limited number of listeners. To save your spot, just go to investtalk.com. Click on the schedule a meeting button. I think he has a couple spots left. Now, right now, on this July 27th edition of Invest Talk, we're ready to take any money questions you may have. 888-99-CHART is how to get through to Invest Talk.
Hi, this is Noel from National City, calling on two companies, Honeywell, H-O-N, and Deere & Company, D-E. I'd like to know if it's a good time to get into either one of these companies and your opinion on either one of them. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, she's looking at Honeywell and Deere, and I'll try to get to them both quickly. Honeywell provides automotive and aerospace products, security technology, specialty chemicals, engine systems. It's a very diversified industrial name, and I like the company. It's a good company. I can't say anything terrible about the company as a whole, but the valuations are a little stretched. Revenues are starting to fall. Profits are starting to decelerate. Profitability is still good, 2% dividend yield. The biggest issue to me is technically it's starting to weaken just with the overall market. So that would worry me. It just made a lower high again. So I'm kind of I'm neutral on Honeywell. I don't love it. I like the company, but I don't love it here. I'll say that. And then I think it was Deere she was looking at as well. That I definitely would not be invested in. That's made a big reversal pattern this month and last week. Revenues are down 18% year-over-year. Earnings down 23% year-over-year. Earnings supposed to fall 34% this year, 7% next year. 2.6% dividend, but they have a lot of debt. 267% debt-to-equity ratio. And just not worth it for me. I'm not really a big fan of Deere at these levels, at these prices, and with its weakening of its business. So if I was going to pick one or the other, I would pick Honeywell for sure. But I'm still weary on Honeywell at this time. But definitely Honeywell over Deere. Now let me get a quick plug in for a very useful tool that's free to use. If you haven't tried it, it's our free risk analysis tool on our website. Why not give it a try? You know, managing risk has a lot to do with our own personal capacity to carry risk. You know, what type of risk are we willing and able to take? And is your portfolio aligned with that? And that's what we do with that risk tool, and it's there for you free on investtalk.com. So I invite you to go over there and try it out and see what your risk score is, 1 to 99. Have a question? Give us a call. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me right now on InvestTalk.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. The good news is that you now have more control over your retirement money. And for some of us, that's the bad news, too. But we have 6 steps to 401k success to help, and that's our talking point for Tuesday's podcast.
Let's go to Syed in Oakland. How are you doing, Syed?
Hi. How are you doing today?
Doing good. What can I do for you?
Good, yeah. Looking for like Facebook.
It's
been holding very good, you know, but today it went down under $95.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you about your opinion, you know, is it a good buy regarding the earnings coming up Wednesday?
I wouldn't be buying Facebook. I think Facebook is overvalued. Its revenue growth is slowing down. Its earnings growth is slowing down. And if the underlying nature of this market, which is starting to resemble a recessionary type of environment in the next year or so, unless things start to change pretty quickly, the first thing that happens in a recessionary environment, what do businesses cut first? What do you think they cut, Syed?
Employees.
Employees, yes. But the main thing is advertising. Because advertising, it's hard to track.
Okay.
And if they're not getting the revenue out of it, the ROI for advertising goes down the drain pretty quickly. And Facebook and a lot of other advertising platforms, even though they're online, will get hurt as well. And so that's why I'm not a big fan of Facebook at this time. I do think that it will stand the test of time. It'll be around for a long time, and it's good to have in your watch list. But at 55 times earnings, and earnings was only supposed to grow 15% this year and 32% next year, I'm just not a fan of Facebook at these levels. So I wouldn't be buying it here.
And now, and also another question, what do you think about the interest rate right now with the China and all this problem? Do you think the Fed's going to cut the rate or is going to leave it as it is?
Well, they can't cut. the rates are at zero. They want to get off of it. I think that the Fed will raise rates at some point this year, and they won't raise rates again for a very long time, and they might even reverse course and lower rates during the next recession. So I think that interest rates will be going higher, but I think it will be a slow slog higher. It won't be this big, you know, rush from, you know, what we're at now, which is about 2.2% of the 10-year. I don't think we're going to go to 3 or 4 in the next year or something like that. I think we'll stay around this range for a while, and over time it'll slowly tick up.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Sam. Right,
thank you.
Let's go to VJ in Fremont. How you doing, VJ?
I'm doing good. Thanks for taking my call, Justin.
No
I
problem.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
My question is, you just mentioned commodities look very attractive, quite beaten down right now.
Mm-hmm.
And same is with oil.
Mm-hmm.
Oil and oil services. Can you recommend few, ETFs? That we can look into cover this thing and start dollar cost averaging at this point?
Uh-huh. Well, there is the XLE, there is the OIH. Those are kind of the two most popular energy or oil ETFs. XLE is the Energy Select Spiders ETF. The OIH is oil service companies. So you're thinking, those are the Schlumbergers of the world. Those are the Halliburtons of the world, Baker Hughes, National Oil, Varco. Those are the companies that don't own these oil fields, but they help service and drill for the oil with the E&Ps that actually are owning the oil fields, right? So those are kind of the two that I would be going with. That's a good place to start if you're looking for exposure to the energy sector.
How about commodities?
Well, oil is a commodity. I'm trying to remember. There's DBA. That is a agriculture ETF. PowerShares Deutsche Bank agricultural ETF. And that is, I'm trying to remember if that holds individual companies. No, that is actually holding the actual agriculture futures. So sugar, live cattle, corn, soybeans, cocoa, etc. So you're getting direct exposure to that area of the marketplace. So that's certainly one to watch. But I don't know if that's exactly the one I would be invested in. That's just one I kind of keep an eye on just to see what agriculture prices are doing. I'm trying to remember there's another one that's broadly commodities, and I can't think of it off the top of my head. If I remember it, I will go ahead and mention it on the air.
Okay. All right. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
No problem, yeah. BJ. Thanks for calling. He's asking about commodities, and this is a good time to be looking at commodities and increasing your exposure a little bit, because everybody hates them. Everybody hates them, and that is going to bring me to my talking point that I'm going to start right now and get to the rest of it after the break. But it's really about what it means to be a value investor. What are the principles that you must have if you are to be a true value investor? This is very important, because a lot of people think they're value investors, but they don't have the stomach, the know-how, or the mindset to be a good value investor. So we're going to talk about the six principles after the break. Now, coming up next, in the next half hour, we're going to talk about InvestTalk Personal. Do you know how a reverse mortgage works? Are you sure you know? We're going to talk about that. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. You can give me a call and ask your question, whatever is on your mind related to finances, at 888-99-CHART. Value investing principles. What are the principles of being a value investor? Well, number one is being a contrarian, going against the crowd. Remember, the crowd usually, almost always, drives the prices of asset classes past their true value. Why? Because at one point they were cheap, and people started buying them, probably value investors, pushing the price up. And over a period of time, the performance started to get better. And then other people start to pile in, and they start to chase the performance. And it pushes the price of that asset class up and up and up until there's no one left to buy. And by that time, that asset class is very overvalued. And the value investor isn't going to ride the last part of that train, right? The value investor the last couple of years hasn't been that aggressive in the stock market, because there's not a lot of value there. So you can't be scared to go against the crowd. You can't be scared to say, well, everyone else is selling or everyone else is buying, and do the exact opposite. Takes discipline, takes a little guts. When things look the worst for a particular asset class, that's usually when you get the best value from buying that particular asset class. When it's in the media and everyone's talking about how great or how terrible a particular asset class is, usually that marks an inflection point, and likely a change in direction. So being a contrarian investor is a number one. Number two, got to have an opinion. And you have to figure out, what is the market story? What is the market thinking? And why is your opinion different? And have reasons for that. Right? Because there's such things as value traps, where the price looks cheap. And I think I talked about this last week. Where BlackBerry back in 2007 or 2008, I think it was 2007, right, when the iPhone really started to take off. And if you look backwards, the fundamentals looked great and sales were very good. And it was cheap from a value perspective. But the market knew more. The market knew that they were getting their lunch eaten by Apple and the iPhone. So you have to have an opinion about a particular company or an asset class, that whatever the prevailing thinking in the market is, that it's different. That's not reality. Reality is something different. Okay? So that's number two. Number three, bottom-up analysis. There's top-down analysis, and then there's bottom-up. Top-down is looking at the economy as a whole. Okay? Looking at what are the trends in the economy doing, and then investing accordingly. Bottom up is looking at just individual companies and the fundamentals of that company and the fundamentals of that industry and investing that way. Not giving a whole lot of thought to really what the economy is doing as a whole, because if it's a cheap investment and a good investment, then almost no matter what the economy does in the long term, you will do well in it. Okay, so that's number three, being a bottom-up investor. Number four, conservative assumptions. And why do you have to have conservative assumptions? Well, that means you have a lot of room for error. If you're wrong about your assumptions, you can be wrong a good amount and you'll still make money because you are conservative in your assumptions. Whereas if people are too optimistic or investors too optimistic about the prospects of a particular company, they're going to overpay for that asset class because the numbers are going to look rosier than they really are. So having a conservative assumption when looking at numbers is very, very important. Then number five, reversion to the mean. All asset classes, all prices, they get out of whack from time to time, either to the upside or to the downside. And in reality, if you look at long-term trends, they will revert to the mean, the average of whatever that asset class does over the long term. And just think of housing. Housing went up 15, 20% a year for 3 or 4 years. Housing doesn't do that normally. Housing goes up a couple of percentage points above inflation over the long term, and really just whatever growth of incomes are in the long term, right? So that was way above the mean average for the return on real estate. And guess what happened? When fundamentals started to hit, it reverted to the mean. And that goes with all different asset classes. So understand where it is in relation to the mean, the average of that particular asset class, is extremely important. And then you combine all of these five and you come to what is called a margin of safety. Meaning if you're wrong, you can still be right. If you're wrong about your assumptions, if you're wrong that the inflection point in a particular asset class isn't here yet, you can still be right over the long term. If your opinion on that company is a little off, you still can be right over the long term. If your conservative assumptions were a little bit too optimistic, you can still be right in the long term because you weren't that far off from reality. Okay, so understand the principles of being a value investor, and if you want to be a value investor, that's the type of mindset you have to have. If you want to be a growth investor, that's a whole nother ball game, and we can talk about that as well, and you can call in and ask about that. Now let's get back to the phones. It's always open to your questions, whether you're new to investing or have a more complex question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, Stephen, Justin, Megan from Denver, Colorado. Really like your show. A few questions. One, do you know of any ETFs that do senior notes, floating rate? And my second question is, I was listening to your show yesterday about independent research and ratings companies. Do you know of any companies that do their own independent research? Thanks again. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. I have answers, good answers to both of those questions. Yes, there is a senior floating rate ETF that is called, that the symbol is BKLN. BKLN is the symbol. It's not doing very well. One of the big issues with this area of the marketplace is that a lot of the companies that issue floating rate notes are junk rated names, meaning if the high yield market sells off, this will as well. A lot of tied to financials. So don't think that this is a safe haven. I know a lot of people think because interest rates going up, this is a good place to be. I'm not buying it. So, but that is an ETF that is tied to that area of the marketplace. BKLN is the senior loan floating rate ETF. And then Are there companies that do independent research when it comes to bond ratings? Yes, Morningstar actually does them. You have to be a subscriber to get them. So you would have to pay for probably their online membership, which is what we do. We have their online membership for one of our research tools. And they do their own independent credit analysis. There are other ones out there, none that we use in particular. I think Bloomberg might have their own, I'm not sure. But something to look at if you're trying to find a third party, you know, not S&P, not Moody's, not Fitch, and not have, those are the main credit rating agencies. And as you know, in the financial crisis, they didn't do so hot. So I like Morningstar. I think Morningstar is one of the best tools out there if you're looking for resources of all types related to the markets. Now let's get to InvestTalk Personal. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has a warning for seniors about reverse mortgages. They're warning seniors not to be taken in by what they call deceptive reverse mortgage advertisements that consumer agencies say often claim the mortgages are backed by the federal government or hide the fact they still have to repay the balance of their loan. Many do not understand that the reverse mortgages were loans with fees, high fees actually, and interest, while others assume that the money represents the home equity they didn't have to pay back. So how do they work? Well, reverse mortgages allow borrowers over a certain age to tap equity in their homes without having to make monthly mortgage payments. Think of it as like taking out a second mortgage on your home, right? Or a home equity line of credit. And in those types, you have to pay down the loan. You have to start paying on it, right? Well, the repayment on reverse mortgage is deferred until the borrower dies or moves out of the house. Still, the CFPB says that many seniors don't know that they're still on the hook for property taxes, homeowners insurance, and maintenance, and that they can run out of equity and still be foreclosed on. So reverse mortgages may be a solution, but it should be a last resort solution. And if someone tries to sell you on a reverse mortgage, make sure you understand the details. Do some research. Ask questions. Get help from a third-party expert. You know, whether it's an advisor like us, someone in your family who understands finances, a friend that understands finances, and have them look over it. And that goes with anything. No, there's nothing wrong with getting a second opinion. So that's InvestTalk Personal, and there's a link to a related article from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which explains how reverse mortgages work. It's under our Talking Point link on InvestTalk.com.
Our free risk analysis tool can be the first step to making sure your current retirement strategy and portfolio is really a good fit for you. Our free risk analysis tool is here to help. Ask some simple questions to help you put a number on your risk tolerance. Try it. Just takes about 5 minutes or less. It's there for you on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, Steve. Henning from Kiev in Ukraine. Thank you again for this lovely show. Listening to you on the podcast. My question is regarding a company called St. Jude Medical Incorporated, ticker symbol STJ. I was wondering whether you would recommend it as a stock to put in a pension fund and what the entry price might be. Thank you very much. Take care and thank you for your show. Bye-bye.
All right, I was looking at St. Jude Medical. This is a medical device company. They develop cardiovascular medical devices for cardiac rhythm management and arterial fibrillation. So this is a medical device company related to cardiac medicine. And it's a company that had a very large reversal this month. So it looks to me like it's topping out. Earnings are falling 1% this year. It's supposed to grow 9% next year, but that's also being downgraded. Only yields 1.6% or so. It is a good company. good return on equity, good return on assets. So I think this is a good company to have on your watch list, but I don't think this is a good time to be buying it. I would pick this up in the mid 40s. It's at 73 now. You know, the first support's going to be $60, and I think it will get there in the next 12 months. And I think in the next 2 or 3 years, it'll likely get down to that 40 level. And that's where I would really love to own it, right around $40 a share. But until then, I would stay away from St. Jude Medical, really from a technical perspective, because the fundamentals are still okay, but they are weakening, and the chart is starting to confirm that. So that was St. Jude Medical. So let's get to our main talking point today, and it's about interest rates for retirees and how to handle higher interest rates. And really, I get a lot of these questions about interest rates and what are the risks in today's market. And I think one of the biggest risks are in high-grade bonds. Usually, and I'm talking about municipal bonds, government bonds, high-grade corporate bonds. These bonds are very sensitive to interest rates. And why is that? Well, because as interest rates go up, they're yielding so little that there's not a lot of cushion of yield for if they go down in value. I mean, if they go down 10% and they're only yielding 2 or 3%, it's going to take you a while to make back that depreciation in value. But if it's a high yield bond, and as long as it doesn't default, right, then if it's yielding 6, 7, 8%, it goes down 10%, well, it's not going to take that long for you to make back that loss of principal. And in 2013, the Citigroup 30-year Treasury bond index went down 15%, and the 30-year Treasury is only yielding less than 3% right now, 2.945 as of today. So it's going to take, 5 years to make that back? That's not good. So why own investments that can lose you double digits with very little upside? Because your upside is what? That 3% a year. So the big question is, what should you do? And after the break, I'm going to touch on some strategies you might want to use, and some that you might hear that you should use, but you should be worried about. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. You can reach me right now, and our last segment is coming up. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, president. Here's an info minute from InvestTalk 101, how do bonds work? Well, these investments actually loan money to a corporation or government at a fixed interest rate. They tend to offer lower returns than stocks, but there's typically also less risk because their prices are largely based on the creditworthiness of who's issuing the bond, as well as the bond's interest rate and not market fluctuations. Got questions about bonds? Are they right for you? Why not ask? Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin. They'll be glad to help.
Let's go to Jack in San Mateo. How are you doing, Jack?
Hi, I have a mutual fund. It's a long-term muni bond fund.
Okay.
It's Dreyfus DRTAX, Dr. Tax. And I've been holding it just to get the income from it. It's got a pretty good, it's got about a 3.5 to 4% typical yield on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if I should hold it as interest rates rise.
Well, let's look at the duration. Ooh, duration's pretty long, about 14 and a half years. Let me look at what it's done recently. DRTAX, right? There you go.
Yeah, Dreyfus long-term uni.
So it's went in February at a high of about $12.04 and it went down to a low of $11.60 or so. So it's about a 50 cent, call it 4.5% drop. Right? Whereas the 10-year went from, the IEF went from 110 to 104, and that was a pretty similar drop. in price. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some interest rate risk here. Would worry me a little bit. The credit quality is an A, so it's, you know, not super junky. I'll say that. It's kind of middle in the credit, on the credit spectrum. And it, overall, it's a good fund. The fees, the management fees are a little bit above average, about 0.75% or 7.3%, which is above average for a municipal bond fund. So I would say this is good, but there's definitely much better ones out there in the marketplace. I wouldn't necessarily dump it, but I would probably look for something better that will have less interest rate risk. This has a good amount of interest rate risk, and that would worry me a little bit.
How long do you think it would take to make up for a rise in interest rates like you were talking about before the break?
Well, at 3%, right, 3.3%, it's tax deferred, so I'm assuming you're in a high tax bracket, right?
Yes.
Then effectively that's roughly a 5% or so interest rate,
mm-hmm.
Right? If you did have a substantial increase in interest rates, it's going to take you a good 3 to 4 years for you to make that up. If you had a substantial increase in interest rates, you know, we've had a small increase so far this year, not dramatic, but if you see the 10-year go, you know, if the 10-year so far this year has gone from 1.7 or so up to 2.4, so less than 100 basis points. Right now it's at 2.2. So if you saw the 10-year go to 3.5, 4%, you could easily see this fund drop 10%, okay? So understand that, maybe even 15% at an extreme level. So if you're willing to ride that out, it's not the worst fund to be in, but like I said, I would look for a better one out there that has lower fees and shorter duration.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Jack. Now let's wrap up our talking point today and about interest rates, and this is segues nicely. And what should you think about? One is shortened maturities. Talked about it just now. What is duration? Duration is how long until the bond actually matures and you get all your principal back. Okay, and that's duration, maturities. They're one and the same pretty much. Okay, so shorten those maturities, the duration on your bond funds, etc. Some might say go into floating rate instruments, but I don't like that. Just like the caller earlier talked about, low credit rating and a lot of the floating rate bonds that are out there makes me shy away from them. So I don't like those names. Number three, I would mid-grade debt. I kind of like that. You're still investing in quality companies with decent credit ratings, so you're going to get a decent yield. So if interest rates go up, you're getting enough yield to make up for that depreciation in price, right? But you're not taking so much risk that you're buying high yield debt, which, you know, there's a big problem there that I think is going to manifest itself. And then I like foreign stocks or foreign companies, foreign high grade debt, emerging market debt, real estate investment trust. I think that's not a bad place to be, and low duration funds, like I said before. So those are some good places to look. And yeah, watch out for that credit risk and interest rate risk. Now we're out of time for today. Reminder, Steve will be in San Jose on August 4th for individual portfolio reviews. These are first come, first served appointments. To save your spot, just go to investtalk.com, click on the schedule a meeting button, and someone will get right back to you. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, and for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening. Enjoy your evening, and let's talk again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-400-8400. 877-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.